Hello. Welcome to Fright Night.
No, we already...
I know, I just wanted to say it. It's fun. This is the Rotten Horror Picture Show. The Rotten Horror Picture Show. It's too many R's. That's tough on the tongue to roll that many R's.
Yeah, especially...
Rotten Horror. Picture Show. It turns into Scottish.
You're turning into Skarsgård Nosferatu.
Yeah.
That's where it's going.
Horror.
Yeah.
The Rotten Horror Picture Show. The Horror Movie Podcast, where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Movies of All Time, 200 Best Horror Movies of All Time list. My name is Clay, and with me, as always, is Amanda. How you doing, Amanda?
I'm doing good. I'm covered in bees, and
so it's Tuesday.
Sitting in your house.
Yeah, thank you. My favorite. I have...
When I bring the bees? You don't like it when I bring the bees?
I have a very contentious history with bees.
Really?
We don't like each other.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
I hope they're not like the ones that remember you and dislike
Honestly,
you.
I'm not sure. The two worst interactions I've had with bees. One time, as a child.
All right. They cut you off in traffic.
My friends were in the backyard. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm going to go play with my friends. Uh-huh. So I went running out of the back door of my house.
Uh-huh.
And a bee shot up from the ground like a bullet and stung me right underneath my eye.
Ow.
And I had to reach in and pull it out.
Ooh.
And it was scarring.
Yeah.
So basically from that point on.
How old were you?
I want to say
ish.
10.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The second one.
You sure it was a bee, though?
It was something.
Hornet?
Maybe.
Wasp.
Same thing.
Nope.
Listen, they all wear the same gang colors. Okay?
Nope, wasps do not.
I think it was a bee.
All right. Please continue. Tell us about your trauma.
The second one.
I bill by the hour.
This one's a lot funnier. We went apple picking maybe 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my reticence with bees already set in because apple picking is just like you're going to a bee rave.
Yeah, you're going to their house.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm on, you know, got my head in a swivel the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I make it through the entire experience. No bee problems.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back to the little, you know, hut
or
general store area.
Yes, yes.
Get ourselves a cider donut.
For those who are not from New England.
Get ourselves a cider donut, glass of cider. I'm feeling good about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Pick some apples with no issues. I step foot outside.
Mm-hmm.
A bee stings me on the inside of my forearm, which causes me to reflexively dump the entire thing of cider on my shirt.
No.
And so now I have a bee sting in the arm, and I'm covered with sweet, sweet apple cider. And I know I was in Cider Town because it was sweet, tangy, and brown. So then there's this like petting zoo area.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so I walk over there and like I'm trying to take stock of what just happened to me. And I'm standing there at the petting zoo surrounded by children.
Uh-huh.
And these bees start dive bombing me.
Yeah, because you're delicious.
Yeah. And so I start like twitching and freaking out.
And the parents are like, Bobby, come here. Come away from that man.
Like, I'm about to turn into a werewolf or something. I'm like, blah, blah. You know, just, and then, so finally.
Slapping at the air, slapping at yourself.
Finally, I take what's left of my cider in the cup.
Uh-huh.
I throw it like a hand grenade.
You're going to say, throw it on a child and use the child as a decoy.
Listen, you know what? I wish. Because what happened next is I start running. For the car.
Oh, no.
And my girlfriend is like, why are you running? And I say, because they're following me. And she's like, what are you talking about? What do you mean the bees are following you?
The man in the laundromat told me all about it, and
I
now
say,
I know the truth.
They are following me. We run, we get into the car, and as we close the door,
I'm giving myself a headache.
A bee starts hitting the side of the windshield, trying to get to me in the car. And I looked at her, and she goes, oh my God, the bees are following you.
I can't tell if they hate you or they love you.
I don't know.
Can I tell you my stinging flying insect story? I'm not sure if it was wasps or hornets.
No.
That's why I'm disclaiming.
Don't tell it then.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, no, fine, tell it.
Anyway, when I was a child, my house had a bunch of woods behind, like kind of around it. We were last house on a dead-end street, surrounded by woods and swamp.
Yep.
So what do you do when you're a kid?
You lived in Saugus?
Yeah, exactly. So I lived in, you know, I played in woods and swamp, and I was in the woods with a friend, and we were trying to build a little, like, hut. like against a big rock, or you're trying to grab like branches from the ground, lean it against the rock, and go inside and have a clubhouse.
Sure.
And I found a real good stick that had been in a hole in the ground, and I yanked it out, and they all came out with it.
Oh, like my girl.
Destroyed their home.
Nice.
And they started stinging me and my friend, and we screamed, and we ran through the woods, down the hill, and into my house, where I believe my dad was home, and he just has two screaming little girls covered in like wasp or hornet or whatever stings, and he finally gets us to calm down, and we're sitting on the couch drinking our like apple juice or water or whatever, and then I just hear,
oh God,
and I look over at my friend, and she's staring at me, and I'm staring at her, and we realize the buzzing is coming from inside her shirt.
Oh God.
So I scream again, start running again. She screams and starts running after me. And then the cycle continues. I'm pretty sure my dad had to whack her with a magazine to kill the bee in her shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a fun time.
Excellent. Yeah. I don't trust them.
Anyway.
They have those colors, the colors of caution for a reason.
Hey man, look.
Yeah, so remember a few years ago, this is turning into a bee show. They were like,
"Welcome
to these
rotten horror bee show.
These killer hornets from Japan.
Oh yeah,
I freaked out because I had been talking about those for literally a decade.
They're terrifying.
When I first saw those, I was like, "These are they look like they should have pilots. This is how big they are."
Yeah,
and finding out
this is what the wasp, like the superhero, the wasp drives around when she's small.
Yeah, and finding out that what they would do is they would literally bust through the side of a beehive like the Kool-Aid man and just tear everybody apart.
Just murder.
It's horrifying.
Yes.
However, I did find out, which is very interesting, that the way that the bees figured out how to defend themselves is they form a sphere around the hornet, and they beat their wings so fast that the heat heats up until the point that it suffocates and dies.
See, bees are fucking cool, man.
My question about that was, how many tries did it take? Like, who was the first bee to go like, come on, guys? And then nobody followed, and he just got torn in half.
I mean, this is what World War Z the book was about.
And then they go back to the bee scientist room, and they like, oh, his plan actually would have worked.
Yes.
And then two more bees, but there's not enough bees, and then they get torn in half.
Look, my recommendation is have flowers.
No, then the bees come to your house.
No, that's all they want, though. Look, I stand in my garden, and I fuck with shit, and I'm, like, pulling vines, and I'm picking stuff, and I'm leaning over and knocking into things. And as long as there are available flowers, they do not give a fuck about me.
Okay.
I'm just telling you.
All right.
This is Bee and Bee Hour.
Yes. We are talking today about Candyman.
The longest, most rambling opening to any podcast ever recorded in
the
human history.
The 2021 film Candyman, also known as El Hombre de Dulce. Dulce. Right?
No.
I don't know. I just made that up. That's the sweet man? That's what it translates to, right?
Not really.
Close enough.
Close enough.
It is number 187 on our list. It has an 84% Rotten Tomatoes score, the 72% audience score. Had you seen this before?
I hadn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think I had started watching it once on streaming, and I don't remember how I got away from it. So I remembered the first, like, 20 minutes, and then I was like, oh, shit, I never finished this movie.
That's interesting.
Like, maybe I started it on—oh, I started it on a plane. And then was like, I can't hear and enjoy anything that's happening.
It's a very quiet movie.
Yeah. And so I think I shut it off and then just never had a chance to get back to it.
That's fair.
So, yeah.
What
about you? Did you see it when it came out?
So this is technically came out in 2021, but this was very much it was supposed to come out in 2020. Something happened. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, we all collectively blacked out.
Yeah. There was it got delayed.
Bee. We all shut down the world.
Yes, one giant bee. One collective sphere of bees beating their virus-laden wings around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe it was released straight to streaming. I think I'm pretty sure this.
I think
didn't go
you're right. I think it kind of got railroaded.
Yeah.
By the state of the world at the time.
I'm curious to see in a few years well, I guess it happened immediately, but the language around releasing these movies to straight to streaming was like, no, it's actually better.
Yeah.
You know, I think this way more people can see it. And
yeah,
it's like,
and like everybody gets to watch it in their own time. And
everybody believed that until Wonder Woman 84 came out. And we were like, oh, no, this is not a good idea. This movie's terrible. So I watched this with a couple of our friends, I think probably around the time it came out. I will say it is too bad it never came out in theaters because I bet it would be pretty good on the big screen.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a lot of fun stuff they do that gets very diminished by the smaller screen. I mean, unless you're like got a wall size projector or something. But a man can dream. We have covered the original previously.
Yes.
I don't remember what we said about it, but I'm sure it's a great episode. but if you want to hear some of the other stuff we've been talking about this year, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Sign up for our Patreon where you can listen to us cover appropriately remakes and reboots.
Yes.
This year. We just finished recording the first remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which features Amanda saying the words "pussy gun suicide." Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Repeatedly.
Repeatedly.
Yeah.
Great bin.
But I refuse to say it on the main feed.
Yes. She said that. Yeah. I said, do you want to say that? And she said, no, you're going to have to say it. And I was like, well, okay.
If you want the good stuff from me, you have to pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So check that out. And we'll take a quick break. You can hear the trailer for Candyman, and we will come back and talk about it.
Candyman. The urban legend is, if you say his name 5 times while looking in the mirror, he appears in the reflection and kills you.
Who would do that?
Candyman.
Well, we're still alive.
Let's go.
Trina, you broke the door.
This isn't funny!
I feel really connected to this neighborhood. Cabrini Green. It was a project.
I just moved in around the corner.
The old candy factory.
I'm an artist.
You're looking for Candyman. He's the monster that's part of this neighborhood.
Why are you drawn to this?
I'm hoping to spread the story all about Candyman. The mirror invites you to summon him. You should say his name. I dare you.
Candyman.
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 Don't say that.
Candyman.
I think I made a mistake. I brought him back.
Candyman isn't real!
Something's happening to me.
He had a purpose for you, to be another one of his terrible stories.
I guess he found me.
I am the writing on the walls, the sweet smell of blood. Be my victim.
This is not real, it's not real.
Okay, Candyman, directed by Nia DaCosta, written by Jordan Peele, Wynn Rosenfeld, and Nia DaCosta, starring Dr. Manhattan from The Watchmen Show, Monica Rambeau from Marvel's, Nathan Stewart Jarrett, Coleman Domingo, Kyle Kaminsky, the guy from Hacks, the mom from the original Candyman, the voice of Virginia Madsen, and the face and voice of Tony Todd. Amanda, what happens in Candyman?
For decades, the housing projects of Chicago's Cabrini Green were terrorized by a ghost story about a supernatural, hook-handed killer. In present day, an artist begins to explore the macabre history of Candyman, not knowing it would unravel his sanity and unleash a terrifying wave of violence that puts him on a collision course with destiny.
Sure.
You just looked like you were about to say something, like you were very thoughtful about that.
No, I was just musing.
About bees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Clay, some things you'll find in the 2021 Candyman include shadow puppets.
Yeah, great shadow puppets. Very cool.
Yeah.
Probably best shadow puppets this side of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do they do shadow puppets in the Babadook?
It's the pop-up book.
Right.
I don't know. There might be a couple cut to things that sort of are shadow puppet-y, but it's supposed to be in the pop-up book.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. The ultimate allergic reaction to a bee sting.
Yeah, I felt... I found myself a little bit.
Yeah.
After I got stung in the arm that time, I went to, you know, I did my own research and I wrapped my arm. I smothered it in toothpaste and wrapped my arm with a bandage because I read that that was supposed to stop it from hurting and or itching.
Is this why you now have a hook for a hand?
Yes, it is. Because it ate away at my arm and
and your sanity
in a very racist way. but I did find it very funny that when he goes to visit his mother, she is not as alarmed as I would expect her to be at the beehive carving its way into the skin of his face.
Yeah, I wonder if it was just that when how I watched it, but that seemed dark enough that maybe she didn't get a close enough look.
Yeah,
until towards the end when he says something like, "Do I look normal to you?" And she's kind of like.
It was just weird because he's sitting with his hands all fucked up and his face is all messed up and she's like, "Did you go to the hospital down the street?" And he's like, "No, I went to one across town."
Look, we can get into his relationship with his mother later. You'll also find the return of trypophobia,
the fear of clusters of holes, last seen on the episode where we talked about the newest version of the Invisible Man.
It's
a weird thing, and I have to say I am not immune to it.
Yeah,
because it's disgusting. Like there's something very disturbing to me about like that pattern of holes or like that beehive
that sort configuration. Of honeycomb.
Yeah, like on skin.
Yeah,
it's very unnatural. I don't like it.
Magic dissertation.
Yes, our first Well. I was going to say it's our first magic dissertation, but I guess technically Evil Dead has a magic dissertation in it, right?
Yeah, I think it counts.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Strike it from the list.
A ghost manifested by collective storytelling.
Yeah, one of the things I liked about this movie, which I don't know if I appreciated the first time, is there's like two or three scenes where they just tell you what the theme of the movie is.
Yeah. There's several very on-the-nose lines in this, but it actually kind of works.
Yeah.
Razorblade candy.
Always good to see Razorblade candy.
Yep. Love it's the return of one urban of
my
legend.
One of my favorite urban legends.
Yeah,
is that officially? Is that did that never happened or did it happen? Did that get conflated with the guy who tried to kill his kid?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure there was never actual Razorblade candy, but there was a father who poisoned some pixie sticks.
Yes, that's what it was. I always found the Razorblade candy thing to be really interesting because. The amount of skill I think it would take to do that in a way that wasn't immediately obvious.
Well, that's why it's got to be in those little ones where they're like wrapped in the paper that are like twist tied at the end.
Yeah.
Rather than like modern day sealed candy.
Every single time they've depicted it on screen, though, it's like, well, we have to get this across visually. Mm-hmm. So we have to stick an entire razor blade
in
this piece of candy.
Yes.
Or like in Halloween 2 when it's just a huge razor blade and an apple.
Yes.
Whereas if you were really going to do that, you'd probably want to cut that thing up like
they
do.
You seem like you thought about this.
Who hasn't? I've had neighbors.
You'll also find a girl named Boof.
Yes. One of, I want to say, two movies ever made with a girl named Boof in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
Teen Wolf.
Oh, yeah. There we go. seriously high quality noise canceling headphones.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I want to know what brand she uses because I'm going to need them in my new office.
You don't want to hear anyone getting massacred in
your office. No, I got shit to do.
Yeah.
And last but not least, the most evil cop in Chicago.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but this guy at the end was pretty outwardly awful.
Yeah, he was pretty straight up horrible right away.
Yeah, in a way that's can't really defend.
Yep, nope.
Okay, Candyman. Before we get into this, I would like to acknowledge I do recognize the irony of two white people talking about a movie that is about white people talking about the art of black people.
You know.
But with that out of the way,
let's perpetuate the cycle of gentrification.
Yes. this is a remake of, well, it's not, it's kind of, it's a requel, I guess is the word people like to use, because it's got the singular name, but, and it like the structure is kind of similar, but it's really a direct sequel to the original.
I was going to ask about this because to me, it really does just read as a sequel.
Yeah.
Like, especially by the end, like there's, at the beginning when you first are sort of relearning about Candyman and Helen and all of that, it seems like it's retconned things or it's doing the requel thing where it's like, no, Helen was an insane person who did a bunch of horrible shit and then died, and the guy who was quote unquote Candyman was, I have his name written down, Sherman Fields,
okay,
instead of Tony Todd's
Luke Robitaille.
Is it Daniel Robitaille, something like that?
I don't know. Luke Robitaille is a hockey player.
But so it seems initially like it is sort of changing the backstory, but then by the time we get to the end of the movie, it's like, no.
Yeah,
Helen was saving the baby, and Daniel Robitaille's the original Candyman, and he always will be. And it was like, oh, okay, so this is just a sequel.
Yeah, it's a sequel, but it's a good kind of retcon where it changes everything but changes nothing at the same time.
Yeah, it's very, very cleverly done.
Yeah, like I always thought one of the best retcons I'd ever seen was in the newer seasons of Doctor Who. There had been built into the concept that there was this time war that had destroyed his entire planet, and they managed to retcon that out of exist. Well, they managed to retcon it and bring his planet back without actually sacrificing anything that had happened before it. So, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like, okay, so everything still happened. There was no change, but it also allowed him to move forward with this stuff. And that's kind of what they do here, where previously the only Candyman story we had heard was Daniel Robitaille. And here they're expanding the mythos into this more generational kind of... Not to diminish it, but African American version of The Crow, kind of. And it's I think it's a really fun, interesting way to handle that idea. I think it's a cool idea. As cool as an avenging spirit based on generational racism can be.
Yeah.
But
yeah, between this and Men, we've really picked a couple that are.
Yeah.
Tricky to talk about in a way that is both sensitive and not like, hey, let's just spend the whole episode doing disclaimers.
Yeah. Next time we'll be watching a movie from the 40s where it's just white guys.
Oh, boy.
And Italians playing Mexicans. But I found myself getting hung up. I felt like there was kind of... The plot was kind of fighting with itself, especially as you get towards the end.
Okay.
Because, like, I liked the story of... I like what they were doing with Anthony and the stuff they were doing with the gentrification of Cabrini Green and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But once Burke comes into the story, especially at the end, I'm like... I don't really know what's going on here, because it's like you've got Burke trying to literally turn Anthony into Candyman in right. order to perpetuate the legend
mm-hmm.
and as a way to keep people out of there or something. But you've also got like Candyman himself doing stuff to Anthony.
Right.
Like turning him into a beehive, and like he's a baby that he wanted, but he never got him, so now he's got him.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't really track that stuff.
I think I agree where like I really liked this movie.
Mm.
Like I really, really genuinely enjoyed this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's doing so much though. Mm. Like visually it looks great, and thematically it has so many themes.
Yeah.
It's dealing with racism and ghettoization and gentrification and art
mm-hmm.
and you know, generational trauma writ large, like in a whole community of people, versus generational trauma on a smaller scale, looking at both Anthony and Brianna, and their like, it includes their troubled sort of family trees.
Yeah, that thing kind of threw me too, the thing with her dad. I was like,
right. We're okay. And all of it's really, I think all of it's well done to an extent. I think the Burke stuff does kind of start to fall apart a little bit, but it kind of has a symptom of like too many good and interesting ideas, and mm-hmm. they didn't want to lose any of them, so they tried to fit them all in, and by the end you're kind of like, you could have pulled a little bit of this back. Like, we didn't really need the stuff about Brianna and her dad having also been an artist and also had some sort of psychotic episode that also ended up in him dead.
Right.
Like, that's very sad, and yes, it provides an interesting arc for her character of like, how do I keep ending up here? Like witnessing the men that I love who are artistic and creative being destroyed by that very creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but you don't really need it. Like, you don't really need it in the story. And it's sort of like trying to give her more to do, but it's not really adding anything for her to do in the main storyline. It's just throwing in these flashbacks and then giving an excuse for her and her brother Troy to have like one conversation where he's like, you don't need to be responsible for another person like this.
Yeah, she doesn't have a ton to do in the movie. Like,
which sucks, because I think they could have done more. I think if you had kind of left some of that part out and focused more on the tension in their relationship
mm-hmm.
of the fact that she is an art dealer mm-hmm. and she's curating gallery shows and he's an artist who hasn't had anything successful in a few years.
Mm.
And so there's this like, is he riding her coattails the way Troy first implies and then very overtly says mm-hmm. like, get off your ass and start painting again and earn your keep.
Right. Yeah.
And then towards the end of
I didn't feel attacked by that at all.
No, I'm sure you didn't. but then by the end, whether it's just through like, you know, people being macabre or virality or whatever, all of the art people are starting to say, hey, we're actually really interested in Anthony's new work. We think there's really something amazing about it. Like, you know, like
mm-hmm.
she's kind of then by the end being forced, even when she's kind of scared of him and wants to stay away from him. The other people at the gallery are like, well, of course he'll be in your show. And then, you know, whatever other artists you feel like picking.
Mm.
But the roles have kind of started to swap.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where I really thought like, oh, this movie is going to make her have to make the choice of like, do I say no, Anthony is actually like, I'm not working with him. I'm not comfortable working with him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or does she accept, even though she thinks he's losing his mind, and kind of use him to get ahead?
Right.
You know, like there's a moment where she could have done that and, mm-hmm. and or the movie could have at least grappled with that.
Yeah, I think the problem is that isn't really what it's about.
No, but I'm saying like if they wanted to give her more stuff
sure,
to do,
yeah.
there was more within the central relationship in the movie that yeah. she could have done.
Yeah, I think their relationship I find interesting at the beginning, but mm-hmm. then kind of starts to sputter out because he starts going down the Candyman rabbit hole,
mm-hmm.
and she gets pretty sidelined by everything,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And even having that one bit about her dad,
yeah,
it doesn't really amount to much.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think there's another version of this where she becomes more of a involved viewer, like kind of like The Fly,
mm-hmm.
where she's watching him deteriorate.
Yeah.
And she's trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
But the way that this is structured, she's not the main character.
Right.
And so they just don't spend a ton of, I wonder yeah. if there's more of her. There was more of her originally.
I wonder. 'Cause
that stuff
too.
With her dad feels like there's a bigger
yeah.
thing going on there.
Yeah. And it Although, does.
No, go ahead.
Oh, just that this movie does. I think it wants you to think about commodification.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And taking, you know, pain, whether it's kind of the big historical pain or your personal pain, and turning it into something that can be dissected and bought and sold and mm-hmm. give entertainment and value to others who yeah. are going to take advantage of it. And I think by the end of the movie, that has also kind of been lost a little bit.
Yeah, it once it goes full monster movie,
yeah,
you kind of lose it, and then they try to bring it back at the end mm-hmm. with the stuff with the cops,
mm-hmm.
and you know that works fine enough, I guess. But but I think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. You know, mm-hmm. there's, I think the gentrification angle.
Mm.
Is very strong, even yeah. though it's not something they really spend a lot of time talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it. I found the setup of this to be really interesting because they're talking about the gentrification of Cabrini Green.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing all of these different places that have now sprung up. Like mm-hmm. there's the art gallery.
Yep.
There's the school. The
yep.
school is something like the. It's like a private school or something
yeah.
in Cabrini Green.
The high rises they're living in.
Yeah. And that's the thing. They are also living there.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So they are participating
mm-hmm.
in this gentrification,
mm-hmm.
in which is what that art critic says to him.
Yeah.
But she is also ignoring the history of the thing that he's grappling with. And so it's like,
mm-hmm.
I like that they're kind of giving you this stuff, but they're not spoon feeding you. It's not like preaching at you,
right?
It like no, there's no one in this who's like a pure
yes
either side of the aisle kind of person in this
yeah.
because Anthony is taking advantage of this
mm-hmm.
like he's taking advantage of what he sees to be an urban legend,
mm-hmm.
which is relayed to him by a guy who witnessed this guy get killed.
Right.
And he's like, sweet, Candyman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the guy who's telling him is also working, you know, probably not a great paying job running a laundromat.
Right.
Right. But that's kind of what I was getting at with, like, the possibility for having Brianna do a little bit more in there is it's like you can play with that idea of, like, the complicity within the system,
mm-hmm.
you know, of, mm-hmm. of, yeah, the fact that no one is purely virtuous mm-hmm. by any standards in this, and everybody is sort of sucked in and has to participate in this somehow to get ahead,
mm-hmm.
which I find interesting. And I like it as well. Like you're saying, like, the movie's not saying like, look how horrible gentrification is, full stop.
Yeah.
It's kind of saying like, no, it's complicated. There is no straight up just like this is good, this is bad, the end. It's
yeah.
it's all more nuanced than we like things to be.
Yeah. There was a little bit of it though where I was kind of like one of my least favorite genres, well, I don't know if it's a genre, but trends
mm-hmm.
that can be put into movies is when the creative behind the movie chooses to take out their frustrations on the critic. Because I don't know, I always kind of, the worst example is, I don't know if you've ever seen M. Night Shyamalan's Lady in the Water.
No.
But there's a critic in character in that, and
okay.
it's clearly there so M. Night Shyamalan can beat up on a movie critic.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Candyman, his first two victims are a gallery owner and an art critic. Give me a little tinge of that. Because like when at the gallery show, when Anthony is explaining his art to the woman, like even I was rolling my eyes. I'm like, but I mean, maybe that's just me because I come from that. Like I've been to a lot of art viewings where people have to are explaining what they were going for. And it's usually not something that you feel like listening to all of.
It's also like, you know, they don't go into this in the movie, but like she's a woman and she's having this man explain his piece to her. And I'm sure she gets that a lot, right? Like she's a professional art critic. And there's a little bit of like, why don't you just let her view and experience it on her own? Like, why not let her have whatever reaction and feelings she's going to have towards it without you trying to guide her into what you want her to get out of it? Because that would be frustrating for anybody, I think. You know, like if you're just trying to like look around at a gallery and unsolicited, somebody is like, now let me tell you what this means. Even if they're the person who made it, you're kind of like, well, can you just let, like, you made it. If you did a good enough job, I'm going to get the point.
Right, right.
And if you didn't do a good enough job, it's maybe not hitting the mark you want it to. And that's also good feedback, like, you know. But I know he's trying to kind of weigh the scale in his favor by holding her hand through it verbally. I have a question, though. When he goes to her apartment for the interview, even after clearly really disliking her and having her really she really dislikes his art, do you think he goes on purpose to set her up? Do you think he kind of goes there with the little bit part of his mind going, if this Candyman thing is real, maybe I'll just tell her to go try it out?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because one of the other things that they touch on, first off, before we get into that, I just wanted to mention my favorite send-up of that sort of art critiquing culture is from my favorite show, The Prisoner, where there's an episode where obviously he's trying to figure out how to get away from the village. And they're holding an art exhibit where everybody in the village is supposed to make an art piece. And everybody else just does portraits of number two, the guy in charge. But number six, our hero, builds this abstract art piece, which is actually different sections that when combined turns into a boat because it's the only way he could get access to tools is if he was like, I'm building an art piece.
I need this for my art.
It's a deconstructed boat. And then when they're all looking at, all the judges are looking at it, and like number two is like, what does it mean? And he goes, it means what it is. And they're like, oh. It's like, that's the best possible art response I've ever heard. It means what it is. What were we talking about? We were talking about
the art critic.
Does he set her up?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I think one of the other things they kind of dip their toe into but never really follow up on is after that first murder, when he is listening, he's watching the TV report.
Yeah.
The thing he takes away is not these people are dead.
Yep.
It's that they mentioned the name of my art piece and my name on the TV.
Yeah.
So, like, again, I think that's another kind of way this movie could have gone. But they don't. And it's probably better that they don't.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't. What do you think?
I think it's a difficult question on purpose.
Yeah.
And I do think they've sprinkled in there a little bit of the Anthony is chasing fame.
Yes.
He wants success. I mean, who doesn't really? Do you know what I mean?
It's not me. I do this for love of the
game.
You
just do it for the love of the game.
Yeah.
The
game brought to you by Depends, our new sponsor.
But do you know what I mean?
You gotta wonder why that was the first place my mind went to.
I was very confused.
Anyway,
so confused.
Continue.
We're not that old. But there is this sort of you know, tension of like wanting to be successful and like the trappings of success. And mm-hmm. that is what gentrification is, right? Like, you want the high rise luxury apartment.
Yeah.
You want the perfect location in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You want to be in the best galleries. You want to run the best gallery. Like, it's all kind of mixed in there. Mm. And so I think there is an undertow with Anthony of he goes to the critic's apartment when she asks him to, because he wants to be interviewed. He mm-hmm. wants to be the kind of artist who is interviewed, whose name appears in
yeah.
like the best magazines. And I
will say though, that meeting mm-hmm. was the definition of the meme. This could have been an email.
Yeah. Yes. It is very strange. And it's very strange they even have it in her apartment.
Yeah.
Like,
I thought she was like coming on to him.
I thought you were going to find out they had a history.
Yeah. Or something.
Yeah. I thought you were going to find out that they had slept together or something had happened. I'm not saying that's the direction they should have gone in. It's right. just my knee-jerk reaction was like, oh, maybe they had a thing and it ended badly and that's why she was such a bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I kind of do think that part of him thought, I don't think he went there with the intention of, I'm going to sick Candyman on her.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there was a little part of him deep down that when the interview wasn't fawning and it wasn't sort of like, I was wrong, you're amazing, and things were getting a little contentious and she was still sort of pushing back against him, I do think there was like a little piece of him when he told her, all right, you know, maybe you need to experience it. Why don't you go into the bathroom and say Candyman in the mirror? Go mm-hmm. on, try it.
Yeah.
And he's daring. He literally dares her to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, like a little piece of him has got to start wondering, like, is this real?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, he seems pretty freaked out later in that scene.
Yes.
When, what's his name? Smiley Watson? Sherman Helmsley?
Sherman Fields.
Sherman Fields. When he shows up in the mirror.
Terrifying horror movie staple, Smiley Watson.
I don't know. That could be a pretty good. If that guy was named Smiley, that'd be
pretty
good.
That's my Halloween costume, Smiley Watson.
You know, he seems pretty freaked out by it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not like, ooh, yes. But at that point, he still doesn't. I think he hasn't really interacted with Candyman at that point.
Yeah, and he definitely, I think, hasn't come to grips with the fact that it's him. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think seeing it in the mirror like that and yeah. having the mirrored movements and things, that's a different level of like, oh, I summoned Candyman once to like, oh, no, he is somehow attached to me.
Yeah. That's another thing that we can talk about in a minute. Yeah. But I do like that scene because while he is daring her to do it for mm-hmm. whatever reason he might be,
mm-hmm.
what he's also doing is kind of a continuation of the scene at the art gallery. Because like the thing when he starts going off about whatever and then she starts going off about gentrification, she's mm-hmm. not wrong.
Right.
Like the first right. wave is usually artists yes. who are looking for cheap rent, yada, yep. yada, yada. But he's not wrong either.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And when he goes to her place, him saying, well, why don't you go try it then?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of confronting her with this thing. It's like, well, you have a lot of things to say about this.
Right.
But you're still afraid to say it into a mirror.
Right.
You know? Like right. There's still a part of you that is affected by this, even though you're, you know, shitting on it.
Right, and I do think he has, you know, a great point of if we're gonna trace all of these back to like the ghetto, mm-hmm. who do you think built the ghetto? Like, where did
right.
they come
yeah, that's,
from?
That's what
like,
he says. Yeah,
and I think the way he puts it is like just I really I don't know I got a lot of the way he put it where he said like a city cuts a community off and waits for it to die, like. I thought that was a great summation of the whole Cabrini Green, like the whole process that had been happened is you shuttle these people that you consider undesirable into one area and then you just sort of wait for it to,
yeah,
to eat itself.
Yeah. I just realized that the Elvis Presley song In the Ghetto is actually about this movie. on a cold and gray Chicago morn, another something child is born in the ghetto.
I wonder if that's actually an Elvis Presley song or it someone is. Else wrote it.
He didn't write it.
Yeah.
It is weird that the next line starts, and there's Candyman. He's got a big hook for a hand, and he's got to stand in the ghetto. I think it's so tough to focus in on one thing. I can't decide if it's a plus or a minus for this movie, because like I feel like you can really start to drill down into a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the movie's not really drilling down into a lot of them.
It's almost like it doesn't have the space to. It really doesn't. There's so much happening, and you're trying. They're also trying to include enough of the original Candyman sort of mythology and everything, and adding more on top of it. Because in original Candyman, we have, I mean, the big urban legend is the killer with a hook for a hand.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then the secondary urban legend is the Bloody Mary style, say the name into a mirror.
Because Daniel's got a hook for a hand in a bathroom mirror, he will stand.
And
in
then
the
you also have the urban legend of they were living in the walls.
Right. Yeah.
Those are all in this. And then we also have Candy, Razorblade Candy. And I think I wrote down another one even. Like there's just.
Is it Candyman or Candy's Man?
Candy's Man.
Is it like Attorney's General?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Candy's Man. No. Yes. Candyman. If there's more than one, it's Candyman. Mm-hmm. Candymen.
If he represented more than one style of confection, he would be Candy's Man.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. But you know what I mean? Like we're building in all of these sort of like urban legend folk tale things too.
Yeah.
And then the retconned mythology of Candyman with Sherman Fields, and then we're also trying to get back to Tony Todd Candyman with Daniel Robitaille. Like there's so many layers, and then the reveal, the big reveal of the movie, which is that Anthony is the baby from the original.
Mm-hmm.
Like that there's
on a cold and gray Chicago morn.
Yeah. Do you want to just sing the song?
Another
I can be quiet for like 5 minutes while
demon,
you sing the song.
Cursed demon child is born in the ghetto.
But yeah, there's so and we've got Helen is still lurking at the edges of this movie.
Mm-hmm. I love that Helen has become her own urban legend.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Which is kind of the point of the original.
It's kind of the
right?
point of the original. It's like it's a little bit more literalized in that she turns into a candies man.
Mm-hmm.
Or candy person, excuse me. And,
look, women can be candy men too.
That's true. I mean, what's the line from Anchorman? This is the 70s. Women can do stuff now. But like, yeah, I like that they talk about her. She has her own urban legend, which is very fun.
And then he gets the original tapes.
Yes.
Of her speaking.
Yes.
I liked that touch a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this as a sequel? Because I feel like as far as a legacy sequel goes, I do think you can watch this on its own and not really miss anything. Like, I think it's got enough of the original that people who know the original will appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you go in cold, have this being your first Candyman movie, I don't think you're going to... Let's put it this way. I don't think you're going to miss... You're not going to get anything... Sorry. You're not going to miss anything from the story that exists from the previous movie.
Mm.
I don't know if it's going to be any more easy to figure out what the hell's going on at the end.
Yeah, I think the end is where it starts to get a little dicey with that proposition of like you could watch 85% of this movie going in cold and having never seen a Candy's Men property before. I think you would have a tougher time at the end of being like, wait, why does he look like that now? What the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
What's the deal with the coat?
Yeah, it's one of the interesting things that I think is they're doing this to make you to make the connection, but again, it's not something that they put too much emphasis on, so it's there to kind of make you think, I guess, is like all of the doomed men in this movie, I guess, ultimately Anthony too, wear the Candyman colors.
Yes.
Like they wear that sort of orangey shirt color.
Yeah, yeah. Tan jacket sort of.
Even her father. Oh. In the scene with her father on the window, he's wearing that same color.
Interesting.
When he jumps. So they're definitely making a connection between the Doom, specifically black men.
Yeah.
And this legacy of trauma and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think makes that scene with the father more interesting, but still unnecessary.
Yeah.
But yeah, how did you feel about the execution of this idea of Candyman being a generational fit? My issue with it,
yes.
Now that I've asked you the question,
please,
I'm not going to
tell
let
me.
You, is like I love the idea. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea. I think it makes a lot of sense and kind of and has a lot of heft to it as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
Except when they're like, "Yeah, Danny Robitaille was the first one,"
because
It's like this didn't exist. This concept of racially motivated murder, like
is it supposed to be he's the first one in the area? Right, because in this it's a Chicago stockyard owner's daughter falls in love with him, and yeah. That's the whole drama. So I think maybe the implication is either the Candyman is a phenomenon specifically to the Chicago area,
mm-hmm.
and then there are obviously tons of racially based killings
right,
elsewhere
right.
in the country, or right. maybe there are Candy's men all over the country.
Yeah.
A whole infestation of Candy's yeah. men, or like, you know what I mean? Like other urban legends that have grown up.
I'm probably around. Overthinking it.
Yeah, I think you are a little bit. But this movie kind of tends towards overthinking.
Yeah.
So I don't blame you.
Because like conceptually, mm-hmm. I get it and it mm-hmm. makes sense, but it does make me start thinking like, well, why does everybody have a hook for a hand? Why is everybody bee and honey related just because that happened to Dane? But I'm overthinking and it's like, oh, okay, obviously. The question I didn't ask was, why does this happen to Daniel in the first place? Who turns him into this monster? You know?
Yeah.
I could have.
It's a Chicago mob of white people.
Too many Chicago hot dogs.
That's what did it. That's
deep
what that,
dish pizza.
That hook on his hand.
Is what put that hook on his hand.
I mean, my question becomes, like, how did Sherman Fields get his hook?
I don't know.
Was someone candy manning him?
Yeah. I mean, it might just be a natural thing.
Just born that way?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I meant
with the hook. That was the joke.
Maybe, yeah. he does carry around a lot of candy. It might be a diabetes related
thing. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
But yeah, that's one of those things that I find to be a little bit you kind of have to decide whether or not you want to grapple with it where it's like, okay, we know traditionally, Candyman has the big tan coat,
mm-hmm.
hook for a hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see this flashback
yeah.
to this guy
yeah.
who is dressed like that, but it's not, he's not a Candyman yet.
Right, but he will become one.
Yeah. Like I think that can make it a little... My big issue with the movie is I think this stuff gets a little muddled. Like
I
think it's got a lot of great ideas in it, but I think... there's too much symbolism in it.
Yes, yeah, yeah, and there's too many themes. Like it needed a few to be sort of parsed out and like taken away so that the others could come through more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's supposed to sort of go back to one of the arguments that people like to have about the original Candyman is it a folk horror movie?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right? And one of the arguments in favor of that reading is that typically people say that folk horror is very tied to place and Candyman can't really happen anywhere but Cabrini Green in Chicago.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the whole origin point. It's integral to the original movie and to this movie is that sense of place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of how you can explain it
until Candyman 8 when he goes to New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Candyman in space.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think the overthinking of the conceptualizing and stuff, they explain it in the movie. It's that,
yeah.
that line that I said where it's like, it's a ghost manifested by, he's a tulpa, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that's all you need.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do think that it is, tying it to a singular place is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I just find myself thinking, like, so in the original,
mm-hmm.
Candyman,
mm-hmm.
whether or not this makes a ton of sense, wants Helen.
Yes.
That's his goal in the movie, is Helen.
Yes, and or the baby.
And or the baby. I'm not totally sure what his goal is in this, because he's... I feel like he's being used as, again, as another thematic element.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also trying to give him story stuff to do.
Mm.
And I'm not really sure what his story stuff is meant to be. Like, what is he after? Is he... Obviously, the last line he has in the movie is, tell everybody. So the idea, I guess, is that his... existence, which requires word of mouth, basically,
mm-hmm.
is kind of gone because everybody refuses to talk about him. And so he's doing like a Freddy Krueger type thing where he's getting his name out there again.
It's interesting because there's a very big difference between how Candy Sherman Man, I don't know how to do this. There's a very... big difference in how the Sherman Candyman behaves or functions versus Daniel Robitaille Candyman, even versus Anthony Candyman at the end. Where
please, it's Candyman.
Candyman.
Yeah. Anthony Candyman.
Anthony Candyman. It's his Christian name. But the original Candyman very much had a goal, like you're saying.
Yep.
There was a sense
Helen.
Of... Helen! Yeah. he's sort of at the mercy of his... I don't know if you want to call it a curse or, or just the legend that kind of has built up around him has put some sort of parameters on how he can move through the world.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a goal, and it seems like he has a sense of free will. Like, I've spotted this white lady, and I'm taking her.
Helen.
Yeah. She's mine, and I'm going to make everything really complicated, and I'm going to kill a lot of people to get this lady.
I just really like the idea of him being like, this is my wife.
Yeah.
Helen.
That's pretty much what he wants.
Helen Candyman. We're having the Candymans over for dinner tonight.
The candies.
Is Helen coming?
Please.
Yes.
And then we've got poor Sherman, who really did seem like he, in life, just wanted to give children candy.
Mm-hmm. The purest of intentions. Behind
poor Sherman. Hide in the walls and give children candy. But he seems much more of sort of just like a vessel for Burke's.
Mm-hmm.
Mission of continuing Candyman.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's sort of like he doesn't really have a... He's not after anybody specifically. I don't think Sherman Candyman ever talks.
No.
I think he just sort of, like, I know by the time he is a Candyman and is being summoned via mirror, he was beaten to death so badly that all you can hear is how his breath wheezes when he breathes. That's sort of the sign that he's there.
Mm.
Like, you can listen for it sometimes, which I think is great. But he never speaks. And then once Anthony has taken on the mantle of Candyman, we're back to having the sort of charismatic Candyman who has a point of view, who has goals and wants, and is going to sort of take control of his own legend a little bit, where whenever somebody summons Sherman Candyman, they die.
Right. Yeah.
The person who summons Anthony Candyman is Brianna, and she lives.
Yes.
He leaves her. He does not hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of the one who transforms back into Tony Todd. Kind of in the end, like,
yeah, he kind of goes through all of them.
Yeah, you know? But he goes back to that, like, poetic, almost like operatic personality that you can see why, like, Tony Todd's original was so charming, is that he was this almost like philosophical monster. and we're back to that at the end with big speeches and very dramatic moments and mm-hmm. covered in bees. Mm-hmm. Like, we're back to that. And it's just, I don't know, it's interesting to me that they all behave differently too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things that trips me up too, because it's like, is Sherman acting on his own,
mm-hmm.
or is he acting as a... So it's tough to talk about them separately, because I think the idea is that they are this one entity,
but they're so different,
right? Yeah.
So like, I feel like if they were supposed to be this one entity. I don't know. It feels intentional to me that they're different.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's sort of to try to give these victims of this intense violence back some individuality, so you don't just think of them all as a monolith entirely. Mm-hmm. Like, they're part of a tradition, but they're not the same.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and it goes from, like, Candyman kind of acting as a vengeance demon for Anthony specifically,
mm-hmm.
To just general Candyman shenanigans.
Right.
When it comes to like the girls at the, but even there he's acting in sort of a spirit of vengeance.
Right.
Cause they're picking on the girl. Yeah. I don't know if I'm supposed to like what he's doing, you know, like he seems,
yeah.
The people who get killed in this are almost exclusively mean white people, and they're setting Candyman up as this, again, as this history of mm-hmm. violence and revenge and stuff like that. If you're putting those two things together
mm-hmm.
in every Candyman appearance,
mm-hmm.
what he's ultimately doing is getting revenge for kind of really silly things.
It's the summoning, right?
Yeah.
Like, everybody who gets killed by Candyman in this movie said his name 5 times into
a
mirror.
Yeah, I guess technically it's their own fault, but...
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's this weird, like... I don't know, at one point, the brother, Troy, and his boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
like, the boyfriend starts being like, I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna Candyman. Candyman. And mm-hmm. Troy's just like, you fucking stop it right now. Like, you know, will not.
I
kind of love that he's just like, no, we don't fuck around with that shit. We're not doing that. That's for idiots. Leave it to the idiots.
Yes.
And then all the idiots get killed.
I know we talked about this in the first Candyman,
mm.
but I've always wondered why it's 5 and not 3.
Yeah, because it's so many.
5 is a lot.
Yeah.
And is there some sort of hierarchy? Like, why does Beetlejuice get 3 but Candyman needs 5?
Mm.
And I think it's just kind of like a fail. Like, and are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah.
Because you can say it 3 times and still kind of be like, maybe I won't do it.
Yeah.
But Beetlejuice, by that 3rd time, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Bloody Mary, same way.
Yep.
Candyman at least gives you an out.
Right. Really think about the choices you're making.
Yes.
While you make them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just how do you feel about the whole sequence with Burke at the end, mm-hmm. kidnapping Brianna and Anthony and bringing them to the church and fully Candymanning Anthony? Like...
Visually, I think it's cool.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's turning into a beehive. I don't know why. Like, it's actually, I found myself thinking about Halloween 2018 and how the doctor character is purposefully trying to send Michael in the direction,
yes.
of killing everybody.
Yeah. Sense bringing him and Lori back together.
Yeah. And this had like a similar kind of feeling,
mm-hmm.
but I was just lost on. So he's trying to bring back Candyman because he wants to get all the white people out of Cabrini Green or something. But why does he have to be so literal about it?
Yeah. Well, and is it also like at this point, when he was a kid, he's the reason why Sherman gets brutally murdered by the cops.
Right.
like he screams and it triggers a horrible reaction from the police. And then later on, his sister and her friend, there's like the flashback. I think it's his sister and her friend do the Candyman thing in the mirror.
Yeah.
And Candyman kills them, and he peeks in the door and sees it. Mm-hmm. Do you think he's just crazy? Like, is he just fully insane? And like the guilt over like all of it has driven him to be like, well, I have to make this mean something.
I mean,
I'm just going to lean all the way into weaponizing the Candyman. But again, it's we're in the weeds so deep now.
Yeah, it's really tough to tell because Burke is a character. Really is only serves a purpose as the guy who knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then to turn him into this weird kidnapping monster creating guy.
Yeah.
And like he understands that Anthony is the baby.
Yeah.
Cause he says like, I always knew the baby would come back or something.
Yeah.
And the baby bit is the one element from the original that I think gets lost in translation.
Yeah. Because,
like, I don't even remember what he wanted with the baby in the first one.
I think it was just like, hey, Helen, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to kill this baby.
I think you might be right. I think it was more
along those lines. Like, someone's going to be a sacrifice, and it's either going to be you or it's going to be this innocent child.
Yeah. So when you get to this this moment where it's like we're revealing what's going on, it just doesn't really make any, like, so he's being aggressively literal about what he's trying to do. He's got the coat for some reason.
Yeah, he cuts off his hand.
Cuts his hand off, jams a spear into
it. Pretty intense.
Yeah. Isn't it like more interesting if Anthony gets killed by the cops and just comes back as a Candyman?
Yeah.
Like, doesn't that kind of play... I guess what I'm thinking about now is like, well, do you have to be dressed like Candyman when you die?
Yeah.
Because Sherman was dressed like Candyman, and he has a hook for a hand.
Maybe.
Do not all Candymans have hook hands? Yeah. Does, like, the kid Candyman, does he just, like, punch your knees until you die?
Like, yeah, and I don't know. Again... it's put us too far back in the weeds, right? Like, and it is, honestly, like, it's a bummer of a movie ending because Burke wins.
Yeah, everything he says comes true.
Yeah, he gets the Candyman of his dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets kind of retconned into this poor innocent man who called in a tip to the cops and then got brutally murdered by the crazy hook man. Mm-hmm. And then the cops come and do horrible stuff and kill Anthony, who didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
You know? And then we get a Candyman massacring a bunch of police.
Yeah.
And poor Brianna, whose life is over.
Yeah. Like, well, and she gets away.
I mean, she lives, but everything in her life has been destroyed. Yeah.
And also more cops show up at the end, so they probably arrest her again.
Yeah, but they absolutely do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is... I do think it's unfortunate because I think it is really interesting leading up. It, like, that ending to me feels like we don't really know how to get out of this, so let's do something... crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many different things come from different versions of the script,
because
like him turning into the beehive body seems kind of not really related to anything else going on except the fact that it's just happening.
Yeah,
that might be from a different version. I don't know.
Well, I kind of thought the whole point was that once he was stung by the bee, he was sort of infected. Right?
Like, yeah, I guess. I thought, that's the most literal...
I don't know. Yeah. I for most of the movie, I thought, oh, okay, his hand's getting all fucked up. Eventually, the hook's going to come out of it.
Like, oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what I thought was going to... Like, he's picking at it and peeling it back, and I'm like, he's going to do it, and the fucking hook's going to be...
That would have been better, yeah.
That's what I thought was happening. I didn't see the turn of Burke being a bad guy coming, because I thought this was just like... You wanted this. Like, you wanted to use Candyman to secure fame and success for yourself, and now it's going to get super literal in a way you didn't want.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be like, I'm going to chop your hand off now. Seemed a little like, oh, okay. I feel like this very supernaturally based movie could have handled this a little differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to say I love the mirror gags in this.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of my favorites is the one at the critic's house.
Yeah.
Where after he sees him face to face.
Yeah.
It disappears.
Yep.
And you can see her in the background, but you also see Candyman like hanging out behind her.
Yeah. And then he walks away in the mirror. Yeah.
And I think the kills in this are really fun and really inventive. Like, I think the critic kill is very cool.
Yeah.
Where they shoot it from outside the apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you
just
see her kind of being slammed against the glass windows and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. The way the way that they kill the art dealer and the girl is pretty good. Yeah.
After she's clipped them together with her like suspenders or whatever.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's freaky college girls.
How do you feel about the fact that this movie kills a bathroom full of teenage girls?
I mean, so I'm fine with it because like I feel like if you have a movie about this kind of like bathroom mirror based slumber party type urban legend and you don't follow through and kill some kids, what are we even doing here?
I agree.
And not only do they do it once, they do it twice in this movie.
True. It's just impressive. Like I feel like a lot of horror movies will shy away. Like we've talked about in the past. Like there are a lot of movies that will last minute kind of shy away from killing the kids. Mm-hmm. And then for instance, like the Evil Dead remake where they really killed the kids.
Yes.
Evil Dead Rise. That's Evil Dead it. Rise, Evil yes. Dead Rise. That's it. But yeah, I mean, I appreciate that this one was willing to go there, and it's bloody enough, but it's not like super explicit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it all kind of comes. It makes it. Again, I think it kind of muddles things a bit because the way you present Candyman in this is this sort of. Spirit of generational vengeance, so like there's kind of an anti-hero element to him, but at the same time he's also killing children,
right?
So where are you supposed to fall on this? Like, do you want him to succeed? Do you not want him to succeed? I don't know.
I actually think it's a harder argument in the original.
Yeah,
you know, where In the original, I mean, maybe it is just the Tony Todd of it all, but there is something like the tragic romantic hero about him that is appealing, and he's still very bad.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not a good guy. He's not the hero. Mm. He's not even really an anti-hero. Yeah. Like, he is a force of revenge and death and destruction, and that's pretty much all he can be. Mm. And I feel like in this movie, it's much sadder in a lot of ways because you're just seeing these like innocent men, one after another, get forced into becoming this boogeyman, literally.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm thinking about it wrong. And the point, it's not that he's this sort of vengeance anti-hero as much as he is the reaping of what they're sowing.
Yes. Yeah, that's how I've been thinking about it. At least in this one.
Yeah, because it is tough when you are humanizing the people who turn into Candyman, and then they turn into this spirit who is pretty objectively awful.
Yeah,
it's like, what are we supposed to? But I think it makes more sense that he's just this like whirlwind of you know, you fuck around and find out, kind of.
Yeah.
What do you think about Anthony in general as a character? I like that actor. I think he's good.
I love that actor. Yeah. I could listen to him read the phone book. Like, he has a great voice.
They did realize we got to get someone who's got a good voice.
Yeah.
Because obviously Tony Todd.
Yes.
Yep. Good voice.
Yeah. I really like Anthony as a character, and not just because he's generally likable, but like he is complicated.
Mm.
He's, I think, very conflicted in different points. He wants to do certain type of work, but he also wants it to be accepted and praised.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's the direction his heart is pulling him in. Like when he makes the paintings at first, early on, that he shows Brianna, and she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've never felt more connected to something I've made my whole life.
Yeah.
And she's just like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking to myself, man, I was like, yeah, I don't know about this one, but those weird ass paintings you do later in the movie are fucking incredible.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't know how you went from this like graphic
kind of
big
pop art
thing into whatever this messy face stuff is, but you're going in the right direction.
As you go slowly insane.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Is I feel like that's kind of relatable.
Because I do comic conventions and nobody wants my prints of Barton Fink. They're like, we want Batman. We want Deadpool. Nobody wants Willem Dafoe from Wild at Heart.
I mean, somebody bought that amazing Nosferatu.
That's true.
One you did, which was fucking incredible, by the way.
It's fine.
Look.
Amanda, I know.
But I like Anthony. I think it's unfortunate that you sort of know he's doomed.
Yeah.
Like after a point in this movie, you're like, oh, this guy's fucked.
Yeah.
Like, he's fucked. And, like, especially, there's a point at which the movie sort of pivots away from him and more towards Brianna.
Mm.
And that's when I really knew he was fucked.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this movie is about the cycle of violence against black men.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's probably not going to end well for him just based off of that.
Right.
And then when we start focusing more and more on Brianna, I was just like, oh no. We're losing sight of him. Like, as he's descending into madness and kind of descending into the Candyman persona, he as a person is just leached away and leached away and leached away until all that's left is like a shell for the symbolism instead of the person you started the movie with. So I like him as a character, but by the very nature of the movie, he just gets lost.
Yeah, he has a strange ending too, because the action is clear, but you never see him. Like after Burke gets killed.
Yeah,
she's like holding Anthony.
Yep,
and then
we get the silhouette of a cop.
Silhouette. And off screen,
he
gets shot, and then you don't see him again until he comes floating out as Candyman.
And even when he does, he's very obscured by the bees.
Yeah.
Not the bees.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting. who's to say? I have no thoughts on the matter.
Can I read you my favorite line from this movie?
Yes.
Ain't a dick on the planet good enough to offset a demonology hobby.
I knew that's what it was going to be. I was going to say that at the end. But,
damn it. It's so good.
Yeah. The only other thing that I found interesting, and I can't remember how the timing lines up, but I found it the thing that they say quite a bit in this and that they also were using a lot in the advertising is say his name, which is a pretty loaded phrase at this point.
Yeah.
Because it was something that a lot of the protesters are saying and protesting the killings by police officers. And
I remember like Breonna Taylor, especially.
Right.
I feel like I heard that a lot.
Yeah. So I have to imagine that's on purpose.
Yeah.
But again, I can't remember the timing if this was... would have been made kind of before that was a thing.
Yeah,
or
I'm pretty
it's been a thing for so long, it's tough to tell.
Yeah, I think it's been a thing for so long at this point that it's very on purpose.
Yeah, and it also, you know, it doesn't seem like a coincidence that at the end of the movie that keeps saying, say his name, involves a killing by a cop. So
yeah. And then he also, you know, I think the last line of the movie is him saying, tell everyone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like the Tony Todd shot at the end?
I think so. I'm still kind of mulling it over. I have mixed feelings about it, I think, but I think I'm generally falling on the side of I liked it because it is sort of like connecting it all back together into one.
I thought it looked good.
Yeah, it looked very good.
Probably one of the better de-aging shots they've put in mm-hmm. one of these. I mean, it's only like, it's like 10 seconds.
Yeah. Surrounded by bees.
A lot of, they can obscure a lot of the imperfections with all the bees. Yeah, and it's also, it's kind of bittersweet to watch it because obviously Tony Todd just died.
Yeah.
Earlier this year. Yeah, he's a tough one to lose because I don't think anybody really knew he was sick. I mean, I didn't anyway. Yeah. Usually you hear that stuff, but have you seen the new Final Destination yet?
No, not yet.
He's in it.
Yeah.
He's great. But as soon as he shows up, it was like, oh, he has cancer. Yeah. Clearly.
Well, we saw him a few years ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And he
Yeah, it was post right post COVID lockdowns.
Right.
Like, I remember that.
Yeah.
And
that stuff works fast, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about or you want to wrap it up?
I think we can wrap it up.
Yeah. I will say I find myself really liking the Candyman theme.
Yeah.
And they use it a few times in this. Oh, I want to talk about the end credits. I think the end credits are incredible.
Yeah, I love that font.
Yeah, the font is great.
Kind of beside the point, but I really like the font.
And the shadow puppets.
Yeah.
I guess a couple of those things that they show are actual events that happened.
Mm.
If they're not literally, they are heavily based on actual events, mm-hmm. like the boy on the bicycle who gets dragged off because he like looked at a girl or whatever. Mm. Fucking stupid shit.
Yep.
To say the least. but yeah, I do. It's fun because I was watching that going like, you know, I kind of feel like these end credits get across what they were going for better than the rest of the movie did.
Yeah.
Because it ends with, you know, you've got your Daniel Robitaille mm-hmm. Candyman, and then a couple other ones pop up, and then behind him more pop up. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's pretty much, it's all there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's a little bit more succinct than the movie. But as
again,
you said,
I think this movie is trying to talk about so many things.
Yeah.
And I sort of understand why. Because it's really hard to separate some of them, right? Like mm-hmm. I'll say one more line I really liked in this movie. It's a little on the nose, but I really liked it. And one of the characters says they love what we make, but not us.
Yeah.
And that gets straight to the heart of it. But it is kind of like, all right, if you're going to talk about black artists creating things and white people consuming it, and judging them for it, and you're going to have gentrification in there, and then we're talking about, well, artists are the first sign of gentrification. Like, it all starts to interlink.
Yeah.
And so I understand how it's hard to separate out some of these themes, but it just ends up with this movie being really, really stuffed with, like, metaphorical things and symbolism, and so much you could say a ton about, but you run out of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm listening to a really great podcast called The History of Rock in 500 Songs.
Mm.
And it's very well researched. It starts in 1938
mm-hmm.
and tracks the evolution of music into rock and roll.
Yeah.
It's very, very good. But so much of the early stuff that he's talking about
mm-hmm.
are these predominantly black
mm-hmm.
Vocal groups and all this kind of stuff. And even once you get into the early rock and roll stuff, it's obviously well known that, oh yeah, white people steal rock and roll from the black. That was very true.
Yeah.
Like it was, these guys would do a song
uh-huh.
and then like the following week
there
would be a white group that did the same song that got wider airplay. And it's just, it's wild.
Yeah.
Like, and on top of that, basically every episode until like 1957
mm-hmm.
ends with, and their manager, the record deal that they signed was terrible and they never got any money and they died in obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like, it's, I know it gets talked about so often that it can become like, oh, geez, let it go.
Yeah, yeah.
But it really is.
Like, it's so much more overt than you even think it is based on how it's said. Like,
we're
kind of accustomed now to, like, people saying, oh, you know, that Robin Thicke song ripped off mm-hmm. a Marvin Gaye song. And, like, can't you hear it? And it's at least somewhat disguised. Whereas I sounds like back then it was just like, no, they just re-recorded the exact same song.
Yeah. And one of the reasons, not to go too deep on a podcast that is not mine, but I highly recommend listening. I didn't know this. I learned this from the show. You could not copyright a sound recording until the 70s.
Holy shit.
So a big part of that was these recordings that were made, you could not copyright them, and therefore you could just,
everybody could just
grab it and just do whatever they wanted. Yeah, and that's why there's this whole culture of songs that are derivative of other songs, and not even in the form of being stolen.
Right.
But just like, you know, a song will be popular and then someone else will take that melody and add different lyrics and then someone else will kind of invert that into something else. And
right.
It's really interesting if you're into that kind of shit. But for us, Candyman, how do you fit? Do you like this better than the original?
I wouldn't say I like it better than the original.
Yeah, I want to like Candyman as like a concept more than I do. Because I don't love that first movie.
Yeah.
I enjoy it enough, but it's not one of my favorites. I think Tony Todd is doing most of the heavy lifting there.
Yes. Yeah.
I think I find this one a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's so much stuff to kind of chew on.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's something I would go back to.
Yeah.
Do you think it belongs on the list? It's number 187 on our list. Higher, lower, off completely?
I actually feel pretty good about where it's at.
Yeah.
Because I think it takes, you know, we've been talking on our Patreon coverage a lot about remakes and reboots.
Patreon.com/PenskyPod.
And I think this is one of the rare, whether you want to call it a reboot or a requel or a sequel or whatever, this is a rare one where it took a lot from the original and actually had interesting stuff to say about it.
Yeah, it does. It's definitely not a, hey, remember this fest?
Right.
Which a lot of these tend to be, where it's like, oh, I remember that knife.
Yeah. Right. Like this one, I don't feel the need to argue. Like I think this one justifies its existence pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And adds a lot of really interesting
stuff.
So
you think black art needs to justify its existence, is what you're saying?
No, I think reboots and requels were... Is this just another, like, you can't hear the frequency at women speak at thing?
Not when they're wrong.
You think they should just not justify why they exist?
Listen. Damn it.
Gotcha. End it here. We're done.
Better at this than I am.
We're done. We're ending on Amanda winning.
Listen, no one ever questions me about anything, okay?
You've never had to explain.
I've gone 41 years never questioning whether or not I was right about something. I'm not going to start now.
I hope I've shaken you to your core.
I'm going to forget about this.
Just a crack in the foundation now.
So quickly. Someone write me an email and tell me you like me. All right, thanks, guys. We're going to hit the randomizer button. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, boop. And the next thing we will be doing next time will be number 170, Dr. Sleep.
Oh.
Finally, it's funny. I'm not intentionally doing all
finally
these.
Finally, a time to sleep.
I'm not intentionally having us do all of these like remake adjacent movies because we're doing this on Patreon, but we are, so it ends up working. So yeah, next one will be Dr. Sleep. We might not be back for a bit because I'm traveling, and then right after that Amanda is traveling, so it might be a few weeks, but we will be back and we'll be talking about Dr. Sleep. Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks, Clay.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.